SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Sorry about that. I didn't know the mic was on. Unbelievable. We're back, hour three. And I don't know if Scott Shapiro was listening in to Chip Bock, but Scott, you know, you keep giving out $21,000 pick six tickets for reasonable money, and they're maybe going to want you up there at Turfway in the paddock. Good morning. Congratulations.
Thanks, Steve. Good to hear from you and talk with you. And, great last week of the meet at Churchill, all the high-quality racing, Stars of Tomorrow, Clark, and of course, closing it out with a bang was certainly enjoyable.
Well, and, you know, not to go run in this direction immediately, but I will say something. You bring up the fact that this was Sunday, and it's a holiday weekend. It's chock full. There were big cards. You had what, a 12 race card on Saturday. There's a lot of races to handicap. There's a lot of work involved, and to craft a winner in the closing day like that, it's not a small undertaking, and that, you know, that should be folded into the, you know, into the acknowledgement, Scott.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, 12 races in four straight days, certainly definitely a lot of work, but the quality of racing was strong. And yeah, it was fortunate there were a couple of spots that seemed like good spots to take a stand in, and then some spots to open up the races and hope to catch some prices, and it all worked out. But, just a fortunate way to end the meet. Definitely the fall meet here, like Saratoga with those five-day racing weeks, it's quite an undertaking, as anybody that does, you know, what you do or what I do or anything involved with the product. So it felt good to be done as well.
Well, yeah, you know, as much as we love it, a break here and there. I mean, I ended up off last week, which I typically have not done, but it frankly, you know, health considerations. But I completely understand and concur. I mean, people, we all love it, but it's real work. It's not, you know, some people seem to think that it's not taken seriously and just throwing darts out there. It's not the case. How often are you typically playing the Derby City or any jackpot sequence, Scott?
Not very often, you know. I mean, to be quite honest, on mandatory days at other tracks, I will get involved. Or, you know, I think if you're handicapping a card and maybe you see an avenue towards, you know, a couple of singles that you really like, and then three or four races where you really think you can bust it open, I might take a small chance at it. But I really do kind of sink my teeth more into, you know, pick fives, pick fours, and trying to get better, Steve, at just taking one race at a time, too, instead of always playing horizontals, which is where the majority of my budget goes. But you know as well as I do that it can be a long time between drinks, if you will, playing these big wagers. So and they can be frustrating when you're not hitting them. But yeah, I'm not a big pick six guy overall. Just sometimes with the mandatories.
Let's talk about this sequence and how you approached it. And I know that in the opener, in the first leg, you know, there was kind of a universal single. So I imagine, you know, part of the mental approach is to think, all right, let's turn this into a pick five, but don't let me put words in your mouth either.
Well, no, it's true. I mean, there was, a lot of first-time starters in this maiden special weight event for two-year-old fillies that got some buzz and had some chances, some good pedigree. But when Promises to Dance, the 13 horse, drew in off the also eligible list, she did appear, you know, very tough to beat, and a good reason for that. If you're, you know, a figures person, every, you know, whether it's the Brisnet number, Thoroughgraph, you know, whatever you're looking at, you know, the race on a Halloween that this horse ran in was a huge effort. And then she ran to the wire with Marissa's Lady, and they dominated the field, and Marissa's Lady had came back the night before and won the Fern Creek in an inaugural stakes race on one turn for two-year-old fillies on the Stars of Tomorrow 2 card. So she looked very tough to beat. If she ran back to that race at all, you know, they were probably running for second, and fortunately she got the right trip, and the runner-up ran well after not running well as an 8-5 favorite in the first start at Keeneland Walkathon, but Promises to Dance was too good.
Knowing that, and I know Gus, for instance, Gus's approach was similar, where, you know, he acknowledged that if Promises to Dance got in, that, you know, that was a way to slash this thing into from a pick six to a pick five. When you sat down to put this together, did you have a budget in mind, or did you handicap and find horses you felt need to be used, figured out what it was going to cost and go from there? Or, you know, knowing that it's a, you know, set of selections that you're going to put out there for the public to consider for their own building their own tickets, how does that process figure into this, and was there a budget mentally going in?
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily a budget totally, but, you know, I like to put out smaller tickets for the most part on the pick sixes when we give those tickets out.
Yep.
But in this case, being a mandatory and being a couple, you know, kind of having a pretty good feeling that a couple horses were going to be tough to beat if they ran their race, I felt like I could extend it. I didn't want to go over $150. I already feel that's kind of stretching anyone that's going to kind of play your ticket, you know, pretty far. Obviously, I think people understand on a day like this with the free money in the pool why you would extend your bankroll. But it was more just a case of building around those two horses. And in fact, I almost thought in the race where I went three deep, which we can talk about with Cody's Wish winning, I almost turned that into a one or a two, but I just felt like I wanted to give myself a little bit of chance to separate in that race. So to answer your question, I sort of had a budget in mind. I didn't want to go over, but it just kind of worked out. I didn't really have to make any tough decisions.
Well, and the second leg is obviously, you know, the way this thing played out, there were essentially three races that you had to be clever, creative, smart. You had to latch on to find the prices. And it started with Ben Colebrook and the Sky Mesa filly, Enter Sandwoman. And this was a high-level claiming event, and Enter Sandwoman ends up 44-1. You went seven deep in here, and explain what the thought process, three-quarters, $50,000 claimers.
Yeah, you know, when I looked at this race on paper, I thought it had a big chance to collapse. I thought there was a lot of early speed in here, even with the scratch of maybe the speed of the speed, number six, Shelby. There did seem to be a lot of horses that I thought would be involved. Now, unfortunately, one of them got scratched after the sequence started. In number 12, off we go. It was 4-1 on the morning line. So that made me a little bit nervous, and in the end, I was right and wrong about that. I mean, one of the speed horses, Busy Echo, was very tough in the lane, but they did still go pretty fast early, and so I thought, you know, I'm going to use all the horses I think that have any chance to take advantage of that, because I don't have a very strong opinion on any of them specifically. And this horse had been going two turns and had been fairly competitive, albeit it was at Belterra and Thistledown, but those are allowance races. I mean, it's not as if those horses never win these claiming events at Churchill Downs. And, you know, what the key was is this horse topped the gate, you know, on a one-turn race and really was able to get position. And then when she made a move on the far turn, she just had the foundation of those two-turn races. So it worked out well. It was one of those cases where I think I picked the horse, you know, for fifth or something. It wasn't as if it was a top pick, but I'm glad I used.
Well, and this really was the key. And when you look, you know, when you look at the PPs, I mean, she's she's a marginal player. There's at best the I guess the one thing from a handicapping maxim scenario, I suppose, is this was her first time in for a tag since she broke her maiden for 40. And as old-fashioned as that is, as a handicapping axiom, it absolutely still plays. And you will see, very often, you'll see a horse either return to the level of its last win or, you know, in for a claim for the first time, obviously, first for a claim. That's an angle that doesn't grow whiskers. I mean, it's a perennial.
Yeah, no doubt about it. For, you know, being in for a tag, sometimes the races might not, you know, might not be that much different on paper than you would think the allowance races would be at, you know, some of these Ohio tracks or even, you know, in New York or Maryland where this horse had been racing. But yeah, it was a class drop, and then you combine that with the cutback, which can be, it, you know, when you get a horse cutting back from two turns to one turn, dropping in class and getting out of the gate and getting positioned, you know, all of a sudden it can be a game changer. And, you know, this horse was 15-1 on the line. She obviously got totally overlooked going off at 44-1. You know, you look through the field, and like you said, fringe player, no question. But there's a lot of questions about a number of the horses in the field. The horse that ended up going off favorite, Caught Looking, had run good races at Churchill, but, you know, hadn't been seen in 4 or 5 months, and now's in for a tag after being protected the last start. So while she looked like the most likely to take advantage if the pace was hot, you know, there certainly wasn't a standout really that didn't have holes you could poke in them. So that's why I decided to spread, and you know, that's where getting a little lucky doesn't hurt.
No, and that's, you know, that's part of it. And a big element of this is what you did in the third leg. Here's a maiden special, and again, another bulky field. And OP Firecracker for Robbie Medina goes off at 6-5 and was a very clear favorite, but then, frankly, had to work to get by 16-1 one more baby.
I mean, this is the leg where I felt I was borderline incorrect and got very, very fortunate. You know, I didn't think this was a strong race for the level, two-turn maiden special. It would have been a lot of stronger races, and I thought this Son of Will Take Charge had come out of really good races, comparatively speaking, including the last time out, Chasing Time, who finished second in the race. He finished fourth and came back and won nicely on the Stars of Tomorrow card. Winterwood came back later and ran third in a race earlier on in this card. And I really just didn't like anything else, so I'm thinking I either have to really spread deep in here or count on, you know, the two sprints to a route and kind of a lesser group. And, man, OP Firecracker got a dream trip, sat the pocket. You know, if this horse was a legitimate 6-5, I think the horse should have won by 3 lengths. And really never looked like a winner, but just grinded by the runner-up and those from off the pace, just couldn't get by. It's just another example of Tyler Gaffleone with a difference-making ride at Churchill Downs.
Wins by a neck and 440. So here you are. You're halfway home, and there is no more harrowing scenario, frankly, than getting the singles home. And you've now, you know, had what felt like the slam dunk single. You've got the giant price, and now you've got the high wire act single home, and you're 3 by 5. By 7 the rest of the way.
Yeah, and race 10 was one of the better races on the card, non-winners of 3 with a massive allowance purse and a couple of really good horses in here. And to be quite honest, I went 3 deep in here. Normally on a non-mandatory day, I probably would have gone 1 or 2 deep, you know, not using 2 significant favorites and a price, probably cutting out one of the favorites. But because of the excess money in the pool and what, you know, I felt like that the budget was okay to spend, I ended up using Cody's Wish, who's been awesome, great story for Godolphin and Bill Mott, been great at the one-turn mile. I used a real nice horse in Ducali for Brad Cox and Judd Mott. And I wanted to use number 10, Renway Magic, regardless, because this would have been, you know, a separator in the sequence. Had run a super good race, 2 back here at Churchill, and I thought Bounce in the Perryville at Keeneland, and, you know, it really was never much of a sweat here. It was, you know, the top two were Irish Unity and Runway Magic up front. It always looked like Runway Magic was going to get the best of that one, but then the two favorites were just too good, and Ducali was run down in the lane but after putting up a fight for Cody's Wish, and I guess the one semi-unlucky part of the, you know, maybe if I could have caught Ducali, it probably would have been that much bigger of a difference. I think a lot of people probably singled Cody's Wish, but he was the best, but, it was a good race to the end.
Well, and, you know, to make these pay, and obviously when they put, what was the final amount that was bet into this?
I think it was 200 and something, bet into it, it was, I think, 800-ish. I think it was about $1 million pool. It was a little over $200,000 in terms of the carryover, but I think in the end it was about $1 million.
Okay, to make these pay, you can't take all the logicals. It just doesn't happen. You've got to be willing to put horses and you don't know, obviously, when you build the ticket, you don't know that Enter Sandwoman is going to be 44-1, and there's no guarantee, by the way, that she was 44-1 in the pick six. I mean, she might have been, you know, much less. That's a whole different discussion, frankly. So having a 7-1 in this spot with Runway Magic, you probably could have cut the expense. I mean, and frankly, Scott, when I know when I build the tickets and I put them out, people are they can look, they see, and I'm the same. I have the same philosophy in terms of keeping the budget low. If people want to add horses, either their own or horses that I haven't used, that's fine. I'm sure there's people that looked at this ticket and said, well, you know what? In the 10th, I don't think I need to go three deep. I can probably get away with Cody's Wish. So, I mean, the ticket as published, it was $147, but it just as easily could have been slashed down to $49.
Yes, exactly. And I thought about singling Cody's Wish in addition to it, but like we discussed, I felt okay going a little bit bigger and giving myself some separation. And, it would have worked out that way, but it would have been a little bit more of a sweat that race, I'll tell you, trying to get by, because Ducal ran really big.
We get to a seven, what ended up being a seven-horse field after a couple of scratches. You got two legs left now, the 11th and the 12th. And this is an allowance group going 7/8. And you've got five of the seven. And Eben ends up your winner here a little under 10-1. And this is a horse that's already, here's another classic maxim. This is a horse that's in for the 80,000 tag that's already cleared the condition.
Yeah, Eben is a horse that was really good at Churchill Downs last year and then kind of tailed off towards the end, took on some stakes company and was a little bit much, and then had some excuses, I thought, in the first two races. Was claimed by a pretty cagey barn, a little lower profile if you don't follow the Kentucky circuit and Juan Cano, but, got an outside stalking trip, another horse that just popped the gate and got into the perfect position, and really in a race where there was never a sweat, amongst the horses that I needed, but clearly this was the best case scenario. There were two favorites in Continuation and in Shadow Matter that would have been, the least attractive for me. And then the Americana, who was my top pick, and Frosted Grace would have been nice, but this horse was clearly the best for me. And man, you want to talk about a rocking chair route, you really never had to worry about this one. And of course, just got the perfect trip, took control at the top of the lane, and really buried him.
Well, that was a Marty McGee, the open air outside box where the air is fresh and clear. That's how that one came down. And yeah, you're right. The biscuit just absolutely sitting poised, wins off by three. And, 21.60 for those that bet on the nose. And now we're into the nightcap. And I mean, where are you, mentally and emotionally, knowing that you've got a hat full of these 11 going into the nightcap?
I felt pretty good, I guess there was some scratches early on, and there were a couple horses that borderline you know, scare you. And obviously they scare you a lot more, Steve, as you know, when you get to this point than they did when you were handicapping the night before and in the morning thinking you had the race covered. But I felt good. And then the more amazing thing was I didn't really think there would be such separation in the payout between the morning line favorite, number 8 Lady Traveler, and the rest of the field. But that horse was $10,000, and then every other one was between like 16 and 23, very, very much in line with what you would have expected. So, you know, you're getting to that point, and obviously you would take the favorite. But, you know, I didn't even pick the horse in my top three, I don't think. And, you know, you're just hoping, A, to beat the ones that you don't have, but also beat that one when you're in this opportunity. And she just didn't get out of the gate well. And fortunately, we were able to hold on with Fire on Time, who just held off Social Dilemma, who was coming running and just didn't have enough time to get by that one. And I'm sure the fact that this one, who drew an off the also eligible list, that probably helped the payout a little bit, but was also just a pretty square price up there. And actually a horse that I picked on top, so that, you know, kind of felt good.
What a great way to close it out. And that was, of course, Dale Romans and the Albaugh family. And another Not This Time that the Albaughs scooped up, Joe Talamo aboard. Wins like this, Scott, you get to, you end up, there's certain horses that, you know, you don't forget. And, you know, I shouldn't make out like this is, you know, the only big score, because you've hit, over the years, you've hit your share.
Yeah, I've had some better ones than this. Fully honest, though, it's been a little bit of time since a good one of this nature. You know, I've been through kind of a drought in terms of hitting these, you know, five-digit scores that which allow us to have a profitable year versus non. Because, you know, as much as you can grind away in this game, in the way, at least the way I play, if I'm not getting a score or two like this a year, I'm not going to have a profitable year. And you know, as we come close to the end of the year and end of the meet that, you know, is the circuit that's most important to me and my job, it definitely was a good time for it. It was much needed. But it had been a little while since I've had anything like this.
Well, the final number, 21,832, plus whatever else you gathered in along the way. Did you play pick fours and pick fives?
I did not. I did not play them. I just played the pick six. I actually didn't bet any of these races throughout the day. I did bet a couple races before it, but I just focused on the pick six that day, and because I was alive, and, you know, I guess I wish I played the pick five and played the exact same ticket with the 44-1 shot winning, but it never really even crossed my mind, to be honest.
You know, you don't have to be, nobody's got to get greedy, although, you know, everybody always says, no one ever bet enough on a winner. I imagine that people, you've heard from some people, right, that came along with you?
Yeah, there were some people that came along for sure that felt good. There were obviously people that, you know, almost played it or whatever they, you know, whatever they might have said, and, you know, were still happy. And, you know, it was just good to hear from, you know, I think it's funny, and you have a hit like this, and not, you know, it was definitely good construction. I felt like I got lucky with one of the favorites winning, and, you know, I built it around obvious horses. So it's funny. I think there's days where I have significantly more sharp opinions, and, you know, maybe three winners at 6-1 or higher, you don't hear much, you know. And then a day like this comes, and you know, you're obviously the results are what leads to people communicating. But, you know, I find it a little funny, but I'm actually, you know, it's all obviously very good to hear from so many people and to help others win in the role that I have and go out kind of on top to end our fall meet.
Well, on that topic, actually, what's the winter plan? You can call Chip Bock as soon as we're done, because he's looking for a paddock analyst.
I am following Oaklawn for Twin Spires.
Nice.
So I'll be putting out the Oaklawn picks on the expert picks videos on the website and on the app, and then I'll be dipping my toe in the Turfway. Really have enjoyed it. You know, up there, I thought last year with the new surface, it was really enjoyable. pretty fair track. You know, you get to some days where it's closer friendly and whatnot, which is fun. Real good track for anybody that, you know, likes to take trip notes because they're full fields and a lot going on that in those races. But yeah, mostly Oaklawn, and we'll do a little bit of Turfway. And very kind of Chip, I didn't hear it, but for the nice words.
Well, the Oaklawn side of things, you know, with Ed having left, I'm going to turn to you for some Oaklawn opinion as part of the Friday coverage. With you can start to pair up with Scully.
That sounds great. Yeah, looking forward to it. Getting it started so early here, it's going to getting used to it right away. But should be fun. Hopefully, you know, a lot of the horses that we have here in Kentucky go there, or fairgrounds for the most part, or stay at Turfway. So a lot of familiar faces. And last year was the first year I really, you know, covered that full time. Used to be more of a Gulfstream guy, like them both. But yeah, it's a fun meet. It's going to be extended. And not going to complain about the 3-day racing week, Steve, after the 5-week, 5-day-a-week month in November. I'll be very happy with that.
Well, the fall, depending on what you do during the summer, and between Del Mar and Saratoga, September, October, November, it's intense. And you know, we haven't even talked about Breeders' Cup and, you know, what's involved there, and you know, the obligations for Twin Spires and Briss, and you know, putting out analysis, and you're doing plenty of sports stuff too.
Yeah, the NFL this time of year, I love professional football. Didn't want to, you know, never would really want to, at least now, give that up. So it's definitely a juggling act, and I, you know, I wouldn't trade any of it. I'm not trying to say otherwise. But November, when you have the 5-day week in the NFL, and like you said, the Breeders' Cup the first week, it's busy. We'll just say that.
How long have you been in Kentucky now?
It's been about 3.5 years exactly that I moved here 2 weeks before the Justify Derby. That was the first one I worked at Churchill. You know, I've done a lot of work in California for Twin Spires for a couple of years. But, yeah, I got here. I guess that would make it just about 3.5 years, maybe a few ticks more because it would be November. But basically 3.5 years.
Well, it had a well-established opinion before coming to the Ville and joining Twin Spires and Churchill, and you know, it's always got to be gratifying and you know, rewarding when you get something like this, you know, out in the open. I mean, we all. You know, we're all playing on a regular basis, and not, you know, there's any number of times that there's hits that, you know, you just had, you know, privately and quietly, and I don't feel obliged to be, you know, showing tickets on social media, but you do this for the public, Scott, and it just really, it makes you feel so good, you know, because it in a lot of ways it reinforces what you know, what you've come to think of or what is your, you know, your vocation. You know, it makes you, you know, makes you feel like you know, you're doing what you love, and when people get to see it like this, it feels great. I'm just so delighted for you.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, very gratifying. Just tremendous opportunity was you know, given to me. Ed a big part of it. You know, a couple other people. Hope to think I've taken advantage of it. But you know, just an honor to be able to go to a track like Churchill Downs, where you know the biggest race in the country, perhaps the world, is run every year, and get to work from there, and you know, makes you feel good about, you know, the work you put in to get here. And then, you know, if you can help people along the way, make some money, and you know, on a day like this, or you know, just the other days as well, that's what it's all about.
Well, get to work on that Friday Saturday card at Oaklawn, and we'll talk to you Friday with Scully.
Sounds good, Steve. Thanks for having me. Always good to chat with you and catch up, and look forward to chatting more now in the future.
Without fail, Scott Shapiro, everybody, and you follow Scott on Twitter, and it's Scott Shap 34. Is Shapa the Kappa still around somewhere? Is that in mothballs?
The ShapaTheKappa.com. I retired the site. The offers were they're pretty minimal, and didn't want anybody else to kind of have my brand under it for the site, and I just. It's still a nickname that some people call or, you know, forms of it. But, I think I'd like to be Scott Shapiro if possible.
There you go. Scott Shapiro it is. Unbelievable. The Pick Six Maven will marry a couple of nicknames, all right? The Derby City Six will come up with something snappy for Shappy. Scott, thanks so much, buddy. Well done.
Thanks, Steve. Always fun, man. I appreciate the time with you.
Talk soon, as soon as Friday. Scott Shapiro and the Derby City Six. And, you could have slimmed that ticket down if you wanted, if the budget conscious, by leaning. And I'm glad Scott stressed the wonderful. The Cody's wish story gets more and more remarkable as the, you know, the wins pile up. Here's another one, with Cody and family in attendance, and this is a stake horse going forward. So pretty cool. Well done. There was also, I thought I saved it. Speaking of pick six hits, the Naira pick five, on Sunday paid $176,000, and apparently there were two tickets, and, I saw there was reference that somebody in Minnesota hit, and I'm gonna, well, we didn't mention his name, the Canterbury Plunger, right? We had that conversation. It was kind of anonymous. I wonder if he's went back to the well for another big hit. So there were any number of accessible. Obviously, you have to. It has to fall into place. I couldn't get to that Miller horse Sunday at Del Mar. I've gone six deep. That's what Scott did here. I'll put the ticket up too for those that were just kind of listening along. If you're in the car or such, so I'll put it up there. So the we're gonna get. We're going to get Brendan Walsh. Brendan Walsh. Yes. There we go. Sorry. I was going to text it, and I said, you know what? I'm just going to tell you rather than text it. All right. Back to a couple of news pieces while we wait for Brendan. And we took care of that with Andy. I still got some Del Mar stuff to do. We'll have to get – maybe we'll get maybe we'll get to Steve. Tomorrow will be. I can't really even wrap my head right now around the idea that I'll be at Oaklawn later tonight, and there tomorrow, and the next 3 days. Pretty crazy. We'll talk about with Sid. Obviously, we've got plenty of things to do. I want to talk about the 2-year-olds and. From the weekend, and the McPeak winner, for instance. And I have not, we haven't really fleshed out the filly, that Dream Lith, 82 buyer for her in the Goldenrod. But we'll get. I do want Sid to talk about, you know, what this means for, you know, for Run Happy. The visit with tomorrow with Dick too. We got plenty of Hong Kong Jockey Club, but you know, we're a week out from the international races, and those fields are coming together. Big Japanese contingent, and I do want Dick to talk about the Japanese retiree Contrail closing out the career. And I saw that there was an alert earlier. It's going to stand. Let's see. Let's do a quick calculation of what I think I saw. 12 million yen. Is that right? Was that what the alert said for Contrail? 100,000, 105,000 today to stand. So that seems reasonable, right? Triple Crown winner and more. Contrail, but Dick will let Dick talk about Contrail and also start to look ahead to next Saturday, to the 11th, and the Hong Kong International races. They got a micro. I will tell you, they've got a micro site that goes up, and we. Let me, because I just sent it to for the links. I'll get you the address. Also, while we're waiting for Brendan, let me remind everybody, it is Giving Tuesday, and you've got countless options. Think about a donation, any off-the-track thoroughbred organization, any backstretch organization, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, Jockeys in Jeans, any, you know, anything. Keep, depending if you're in Kentucky, the Equine Education Program. There's so many. In fact, you know, the program at, I saw Kate and Bradar sent out a link to the program for the Backstretch Learning Center at Churchill, which is much like Anna House in New York. And they've got a program where you can enroll your horse, and a certain percentage of earnings goes to the Backside Learning Center. So that's an option. Another thing we got to do, we can't do it. We're going to get short on real estate, actually, now that I think about it. Usually right about these weeks we slip in the books, the easy gifts for for the horse lover on your list. I'll get that in. I know that John Parada has got a new book coming out. We've been waiting actually for months. John, it's not John's typical story in a kind of thing, you know, nonfiction, or I should say fiction, or when it came to racetrackers, you know, sort of nonfiction. John has put together a comprehensive guide to the financial side of thoroughbred investment. So we're going to get John to visit. He's going to come to the studio. Case you'll see John at some point in the next week or so. All right. Well, because I want it's just going to be available in time for holiday gift giving. You know what else is going to be available for holiday gift giving? A season to Maxfield. Brendan Walsh joins us. Brendan, who wouldn't love a season to Maxfield?
Well, they're a rare commodity right now, apparently, Steve. They're selling like hotcakes, as we say.
Yeah, well, that's true, right? They're going to book. They'll book up, and well, let's talk first about getting him. You know, getting him to that point, and you know, it was a pretty magical weekend. You know, Max Fields' win to end his career, Brendan, and then 24 hours later, up at Woodbine, there was Pink Lloyd leaving the stage, a winner, a 9-year-old gelding. Max Field has been consistently good from word go, and talk a little bit about prepping him and getting this walk-away home run.
Sure, Steve, you know, it's no secret. I mean, the horse has been, you know, he's been a fantastic horse ever since day one. You know, as far as training's concerned, he's always been, you know, he's been a pleasure to train. He's got a ton of class, you know, got a great mind, as everybody can see. And he's a lovely big physical, and you know, he's never outside of getting injured a couple of times. I mean, he's never had a bad day from the start to the finish. You know, so I couldn't really say enough about him. I mean, we're lucky enough. We had him. You know, I guess you go through your career, and you're lucky if you ever have a horse that might come up to be as talented as him. You know, but like, we've been lucky enough. We've had some very good horses, and then there's him. He's just not just on the racetrack, but just his whole, you know, his works, everything. Just, you know, like I said, he never put a foot wrong. He's the trainer's dream. You know, and we'll miss him, but you know, it was great that he went out the way he did. That was fantastic, and we were delighted with that. Like, the plan just came off, which they rarely do in this game. But you know, everything worked out, and he got a great ride, and you know, he just kept the spot. You know, with a short, lightly raced career, but you know, you look back, and I mean, he never ran a bad race. He was never out in the first three. Outside of his maiden, everything was in stakes company. So, you know, we're very proud of him, and I'm proud of everybody that was involved with him, and you know, it just was the you know, it just all worked out great in the end.
We should also include, I mean, there were some disappointments, and there were some frustrations, not the least of which, we go back to Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, I mean, there was, Steve, you know, Breeders' Cup. But, you know, he was always a horse that was going to mature and turn into a nicer horse as he got older. So, you know, Breeders' Cup was disappointing. But, you know, none of it was ever anything that he couldn't come back from. I mean, it was disappointing, too, the following year when he got injured at the beginning of the delayed Derby. You know, when we had, you know, he came back right, so good in the Matt win, and we thought, of course, straight away, we thought, here we go, we've got a live Derby horse, and you know, his very next work after that, he walked off the track lame at Keeneland, and we had to put screws in his cannon bone, and that came together really good. Again, it was another thing that we just had to be patient and wait on him. But you know, the people in Godolphin were great, Steve. You know, they never rocked the boat. They left us at it, and you know, he was back that year when he got hurt at Keeneland. You know, that was kind of around June, if I'm not mistaken. He was back jogging at Churchill before we went down to Florida at the end of November. So it was before we went to Fairgrounds, excuse me. And you know, we got him back as soon as we could, and he never looked back since then in the last 12 months, you know. Listen, he great memory, Steve. I mean, like I said, he's a great horse, and, you know, it was there for everybody to see.
when you've got one like this, and I haven't even had a chance at some point before we wrap up for 2021, I've got to get Jimmy Bell on as well, because it's a nice send off, you know, for his association as well. It should be included in here. I mean, it was kind of a magical scenario, frankly. I mean, it's been a magical year, really, for the whole blue team, not even limited to North America.
No, I mean, you saw what they did when they came over for the Breeders' Cup, the Derby, the King George. You know, they've had a fantastic year in Europe as well as here, Steve. But, you know, they've had a really good year this year as well here. You know, some nice horses going into next year looking forward as well. But, we talk about it all the time. These horses are so well-bred, and they've just got some great pedigrees, and you know, they're such nice horses. I mean, they've always got a license to jump up every year. They've got a license to jump up and be good horses. And on saying that, I mean, it's still very difficult because a lot of years, no matter how big an operation is, they don't. But Godolphin have really, you know, the last year, 2 years in North America have been fantastic, and you know, it's well deserved because, I mean, they invest a lot of money in the industry. They put a lot into the industry. You know, they're great people to deal with. You know, it's just a great, greatly run organization. They're privileged to train for, and they deserve every bit of success that they get.
You know, there's a part of this, and we'll have Sid tomorrow, and we'll let Sid talk about you know, where Maxfield fits as a son of Street Sense, because it's a timely, you know, he's a timely success for Street Sense, and it is amazing, actually, Brendan, as an aside, and maybe I'll let Sid do this tomorrow. When you think about the way Street Sense, Hardspun, and Curlin just impact everything that they're involved in. I mean, the font of horses that keep coming is really something. And it isn't, you know, we all remember that season. And of course, Rags to Riches involved in the equation with her Belmont win. But this is a timely son for Street Sense, and it's interesting because the mare was not much, a Bernardini mare. It's the second dam, Caress, that was a wonderful racehorse for the Chief and Harborview, as it happens. When he came to you, what was the initial, you know, what did you see early on, and what were the reports when he showed up?
He came to us. He was highly regarded, but not, you know, Steve. He was a big 2-year-old when he came to us. He had a big frame of a horse. You know, we gave him about as much time as we could possibly give him at two. We didn't start him until September, so we gave him all the time he needed. But yeah, I mean, he just came in as a big kind of a raw horse, but, you know, from the get-go, he showed us talent. I remember Paul, my assistant, saying, I was still galloping at the time, and he said, you need to jump on this horse. He said, this horse might be real nice. And I remember galloping him myself, and, I mean, he just inhaled ground. And, you know, from when we started working him, he always worked really, really well, not super speedy. But, you know, the further we got in his work and the more we got stuck into him, the more he responded. And, you know, it's funny when you look back, because I remember when he ran his maiden, I thought, you know, he might win first time out, he might not. If he doesn't, you know, we'll try and get his maiden broke at Keeneland and possibly, you know, run him in the Kentucky Jockey Club. He'd be nice to 3-year-old the following year. And sure, he went out and he won the maiden. I remember Jose coming back to me after he won his maiden, and he said to me, you know, what are you going to do with him next? And I hadn't even thought about it. you know, and he said to me, what about the race at Keeneland? And I went to grade one, and he's like, yeah. And I honestly had not, it had not even entered my head at that stage. you know, and he came back and he worked great a week out off into futurity, and we said, yeah, let's take a shot at this, and, you know, the rest is history.
Yeah, very much. And you look at the totals, 8 wins from 11 starts, 2 seconds, and a third. Never off the board. The Breeders' Futurity, the grade one. Then, of course, had to be paused. The Matt Wynn, the Tenacious at Fairgrounds, the Mine Shaft. Third, you've sent them out to Santa Anita for the big cap. Came back and wins the Ali Sheba, wins the Foster. Second in the Whitney, second in the Woodward, and then closes it out with another grade one. So a grade one at four and a grade one at two. And just noticed, I didn't realize, that put him just over $2 million in earnings, too. Made him a two millionaire.
Just got over the line there right at the end. So that was great.
Well, it was a well managed career, and I was excited for you, Brendan, on Friday, and was looking forward to this visit. And you almost came very close to winning two more grade ones on the weekend. For those that weren't in tune to what was going on at Del Mar, Santon, second in the Hollywood Derby behind just an unbelievable Kent DeSormo ride on Beyond Brilliant. And then Zafel ran very well. You know, the pace scenario there, Regal Glory was going to be very tough the way that race unfolded. But two grade one placements, not so bad out at Del Mar.
No, it was fantastic, actually. Santon really ran, you know, he ran a great race. He won only his third career start. To go out there with a 14-14 draw, and to, you know, I thought when I saw the draw, I was like, God, we thought highly of him, obviously, if we were going to bring him all the way out there. But then when I saw the draw, I thought, well, not alone do we have to sacrifice an experience advantage, now we've got to cope with a poor draw as well. But, you know, like with Maxfield, the good one seemed to overcome stuff like that. And, you know, he ran a bang-up race, really, Steve. You know, and, I mean, he just got beat. If he had another two or three jumps, then who knows, he might have got there. But, you know, he ran a great race, and we can't ask for any more. But, you know, it was nice because with Max the night before, he walked out the next day, and you know, we've got Santon to look forward to now, so you need to have them ones coming along. So I think he could be a very good 4-year-old next year.
Nice. And what's the plan for Zafel?
Zafel is going to be retired. She's going into Mischief. She's booked into him this spring, so she's flying back from California today to go to the farm. And you know, she's been fantastic as well, Steve. You know, she's a filly, came to us a couple of years ago from England. You know, won at Keeneland her first start for us, and has ran some fantastic races ever since. I mean, she's gone through a couple of periods where she's been absolutely, you know, just a very, very good filly. You know, she won a stake for us in New Orleans as a 3-year-old just before she turned 4, and came back last year, won the Marshall's River at Gulfstream, turned around and ran, got Stormy to a nostril in the Honey Fox, which is another fantastic run. You know, when we brought her back this fall off a layoff, she ran great in the Gold of Cova and ran ran a real good race the other night in Delmar as well to run second to Grade One. So she's just had a remarkable career as well. Has done very little wrong, and you know, hopefully she goes on to be a very good broodmare. She's got a fantastic pedigree. She's by Zoffany out of a Galileo mare. The family is very, very strong. So I'm sure it won't be long and we'll be seeing her babies come along too. We'll have something to look forward to there.
Well, and Maxfield babies, that'll come your way as well. You've been around long enough now that, you know, you start getting progeny of horses you train. So you got to get ready for that.
Sure sign I'm getting old.
Exactly. Brett, a couple of quick ones, because Fairgrounds, I just had Chip Bach on, and we talked about the Turfway season. You got Deck of Cards in the fifth on opening day, and they're underway. Obviously at Fairgrounds, and you got a pair in as well on Friday, Verstappen and Frosty Diplomacy. Quick thoughts about these maidens.
Yeah, they're all just horses. Frosty Diplomacy's three. She was late coming to us. She's a half sister to Callio Philly, who won the Cardinal with last year. Steve, yeah, she's you know, late maturing filly. Like I said, she was late coming to us. Ran okay at Keeneland on soft ground. She should go much better this time on better ground with blinkers on. Verstappen, he's a nice horse actually. We think a lot of him. He's again been a little slow maturing, you know, but he's starting to come to hand. So I'm sure it won't be long before he visits the winner's circle. And then and Deck of Cards. She's a nice filly too, a nice Nyquist filly. You know, put in a nice run at Kentucky Downs, and we've given her a little time since, of course, with no turf at Churchill. But she's right back now, and she's doing well. We're going to give her a shot in the Poly on Thursday, and see how she goes and go from there. But
nice.
I think they're all pretty talented.
I love it. Well, they're all talented in your hands and in your staff. Brent, thanks so much. Happy Christmas if we don't talk. And you've had your best year as a trainer. Well done.
Thank you very much, Steve. Always appreciate it.
Brendan Walsh, Brent P. Walsh on your Twitter. We got to go. Brendan and Kenny McPeak on either side. And Scott Shapiro, Andy Serling, and Chip Back. Talk to you tomorrow from Oaklawn.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.